So here, just a few comments on the end of Tazria. Tazria, as you know, talks about the various forms of Negoyim. And at the end of Tazria, so we're talking about Nigei Begodim. We're talking about clothes that have been damaged or that have been mysteriously afflicted. And the process of trying to figure out what's going on. So kind of the Aliyah kind of picks up in the middle of the story. Avaroha Kohen, and the Kohen looks upon this situation. Acharehu kabeis es hanega, it's already been washed. And what happened? Nothing. V'hine lo hafach hanega es eino. And here it has not changed. V'hanega lo fasa, it hasn't spread either, but it hasn't changed. So what's the ruling? Tamehu. Is considered to be tamei ve'eshtis rifenu. It has to be burnt. Pechesesi becharachto begabachto. It is essentially a decay of some kind, either on the inside or the outside. So here, there is some commentary, really, al pi derech hadrosh, but it builds on statements in Chazal. Some point out the language is interesting. So if you want to say it didn't change, okay, it didn't change. But why the hinelo hafach, it didn't flip over? And also, what's pshat on eino? So why don't we say, okay, the nega didn't change. What's with hafach as the language? And what's with eino? What is that word doing here? So again, this is a somewhat alpidara chadrosh. The Sefer Eish Tamid, for example, by Rabbi Druk, has a little bit of a drasha here. That this is a reference to the idea that you find in the Zohar that Nega can change to Oneg. Some have pointed out, if you just, it's all a question of where you put the eye, where you put the ayin, how you look at things, but the notion that if you take the last letter and put it in front, it becomes Oneg. So one could ask, how does that happen? I mean, this is a bad situation that can become less bad, but why does it become oneg? So it seems to be that this is yet another emphasis of the idea that this is not a physical malady that we're talking about here, especially when it happens to your clothing, but this is not a physical malady, but this is something which is spiritual in nature and is meant to evoke a spiritual awareness. So if it has success at that, if it makes you change your perspective, so then that is something which is a good thing. That is something that will leave you off better than you were before. So perhaps that's the idea, that if it switches you around, then that's going to be something which is a source of oneg. And therefore, again, this is very much a bidar chadrosh that takes the ayin of eino and moves it from one place to the next. If it switch, you know, literally drishically, if you hafach as eino, if you flip the ayin from the back to the front, it becomes oneg. But it means that if you are able to change your attitude and to recognize what the message is, then this is going to be a very positive thing for me. Also notes that Emre Emes suggests that Mitzora, we know that we associate Mitzora with Lashon Hara, but it's not the only Aveira. We assume that this is a spiritually caused affliction, but Chazal tell us there are a number of Averos that are associated with it. Lashon Hara is the most prominent, so one of them is Tzoras Ayin, which we normally translate as stinginess.
Why is Lashon Hara the most prominent?
So it seems to be because it's referenced a number of places. The whole name of Mitzora for the next parasha, Chazal tell us, is a contraction of Motzi Shem Ra. And it's an Aveira which in general takes a strong prominence in the Torah's presentation and Chazal's presentation. So it seems here also maybe when you have a handful of Averis that are associated. So still, it's going to, if among 613 Averis, it takes prominence, among a small list, it probably also takes great prominence. Hi.
You can also describe how Mary is associated with a
biblical
source.
Right.
Which correlates the two.
Yes, that is that's an important point, that the story of Miriam kind of lurks in the background here, because Lashon Hara lurks in the background, because this set of Parshios is a major time to reflect on Lashon Hara. But we don't have Lashon Hara explicit in these parashios at all. But what we have is Chazal telling us strongly, and again, Mitzorah being mostly Shemra, but Daniel's correct that it is explicit in the Torah elsewhere, because in Baloscha, when Miriam contracts this same malady immediately after speaking Lashon Hara, and it's clearly presented there that one is connected to the other, so that is a very overt statement about this parsha. So this parsha is not so overt, but you go to Baloscha, you find a pretty strong, explicit statement in the Torah explaining the linkage here, and then it comes up again in Sefer Tvarim, because the Torah tells us right after the other, that we should remember what Miriam did, and Hishamru Benega Hatzaras, that we have an obligation to be careful regarding Tzaras, which has a number of interpretations what that means, but according to some, that's the marker for the Yisrael Lashon Hara, that pasuk, or that Tishama Benega HaTzaras, then if you are careful regarding Tzaras, you'll understand it means don't do the things that we traditionally understand cause Tzaras. So the truth is Tzaras Ayin, which we can understand as stinginess. So for example, Chazal tell us regarding the Gebatin, that one of the reasons that you have this notion about the house being afflicted and everyone's going to have to take all the stuff out of the house. So Chazal the Gemara says in Yuma that it's going to come as a consequence that people are stingy and they don't want to lend people property. So somebody asks for something, they ask for a blender, and you say, I don't have one. And then it's the first thing that came to mind. You say, I don't have one. The first thing that comes to mind. And so then the house has to be emptied out, so then everyone brings all their stuff out into the street. And they say, oh, there's the thing you said you didn't have, right? So it's a little awkward. But that's, again, this idea that it has to do with stinginess. But the truth is, you know, at least this avera, and one could discuss some of the others also, is not unrelated to Lashon Hara. Because Lashon Hara, as is so often the case, is kind of an umbrella notion which includes a lot of other things. So what are among the motives for Lashon Hara? So one of the major motives for Lashon Hara, I think we've discussed this in the past, we talked about Tol Machlokes the Chazon Ish and the Chafetz Chaim about the nature of Lashon Hara. Did we ever talk about that? I think we spoke about that. No? Just to say a moment about this. You know, this isn't a Shvi thing, but it all connects. So I guess we're going to get right into Mitzorah after this. So there's a big, in addition to this whole notion of Mitzorah Motzei Shemra, so there's a Medrash, a very prominent Medrash, that is also a Gemara, that in Avodah Zarah, it has a little bit of a different formulation. The Medrash in the beginning of Mitzorah talks about a traveling Rochel, who was going around trying to sell something, and he says that it is the source of life. So everyone gathered around, and they thought he was going to sell some elixir, and it turned out it wasn't a potion, it was a parchment. He had a sefer Tehillim. And what he was reading was, Mihaish ha'chafetz chayim ohev yam l'roz tov, n'tzor l'shom chameiros l'sach ha'midaber mirma. And he was making the point that if you want to have a long life, you don't go to some potion, you don't look for snake oil, but you look for avoiding Lashon Hara, that's what's going to do it. And that medrash, a lot has been said about. Clearly it was an inspiration for the Chafetz Chaim's Sefer and title, and or at least a part of it. Right? That's this whole bringing about of the idea. Time doesn't permit us to go into so much detail, but I will refer you to the introduction of my book on the topic of Lashon Hara, where we go into different interpretations of what this medrash is coming to suggest. But in this context of Mitzorah, so it's also fascinating that the Chafetz Chaim, when he lists all the averos that one can violate through Lashon Hara, so we know some of them are a little bit of a stretch, because like he talks about if you speak Lashon Hara about your parents on Shabbos and the Shul, then you'll violate also Kibbutz Abayim and Mar HaMikdash and Mar HaShabbos. So, you know, some of them don't have to always be there. But he also says something which you would not think would be controversial, especially if you're used to Musar Shmuzin and Yeshiva, you would not find this at all controversial. You wouldn't give this a second thought. Maybe that's the problem. But he writes there that among the Averos that one commits through Lashon Hara is the Chil Hashem. So, okay, that doesn't really probably surprise you, but believe it or not, the Chazon Ish disagreed. The Chazon Ish said, no, It's not a chilul Hashem. Have you ever seen that happen in the lesser shows? So why was he so opposed to this? Because the question is, what makes it specifically a chilul Hashem? Is every aveir automatically a chilul Hashem? So there are a few explanations the Chafetz Chaim gives in different places. So, for example, in one place he says that a chilul Hashem is something that tends to increase exponentially. And it gets worse and worse. So when it comes to Lashon Hara, if you try to stop people from speaking Lashon Hara, their initial tendency is to double down. And they say, oh, you don't think I should be saying what I'm saying? I have to say what I'm saying, and I have to say it more, and I have to pile it on. So that's why he calls a chilul Hashem. And one of the footnotes, the Ber Mayim Chaim, he says like that. Elsewhere, there's a definition which certainly should seem to apply very well to Lashon Hara, which is that a chilul Hashem is an aveira which is very serious, but people take it lightly. People are frivolous about it. So that's tailor-made to describe Lashon Hara. But the main thing that the Chazon Ish disagreed with him was that the idea was it was a chilul Hashem because it says there's no hana that you get. That it's all there just to anger God. Like this is not like a normal aveira, like eating treif or stealing money, where people have the Yetzer Hara. There's no hana. And he didn't make this up. It's based on the Gemara in Masechet Tainis. It's based on the Gemara in Masechet Tainis, and by Yisrael Bahal Lashon. So, you know, he's building on that, but the Chazon Ish said it can't be. He says the Chafetz Chaim thinks there's no hana in Lashon Hara. He says that's a proof that the holy author never tasted Lashon Hara in his life. He has no idea what Lashon Hara is like, so he doesn't realize that there really is a hana that people have. So, clearly he understood that there is a Yetzer Hara, but he saw this Yetzer Hara as fundamentally different from other Yetzer Haras. But when we talk about the Yetzer Hara, so what is it that motivates most Lashon Hara, probably? So a lot of it has to do with Miskabed B'Kolon Chavero, that one feels that he will look better if somebody else is disparaged. That's what motivates a lot of it. And that comes from a scarcity mentality. We basically feel there's not enough kavod to go around, so I need to take some from you in order to get more for myself. So that's where this attitude seems to stem from. But if you realize that, no, that kavod is not finite, and that there's enough for him and enough for you, so then you're not going to feel this motivation to do that. So this idea of tzaras ayin, you're stingy, you think there's just not enough, and therefore you have to zealously hold on to what you have, so that's connected to Lashon Hara in that sense. It's also connected in the sense that tzaras ayin simply also could be translated as lack of generosity in judgment. So you're hesitant to give anybody else any credit, to give anybody else any benefit of the doubt. That also leads to Lashon Hara. But this idea of stinginess in terms of kavod, it's important to understand, because I think that that's also what the Mishnah means in Pirkei Avos when it says, "Ezehu mechubad hamechaber es abrios." It says that he who honors others is honored himself. So what does that mean? Is it simple reciprocity? Quid pro quo? I honor you, you'll honor me? I don't think so. I think it's more than that. I think it means that the only people who are truly honorable in this world is someone who is able to first acknowledge the kavod of the other person. Otherwise, there isn't any real kavod to start from. And as Rav Shechter once put it, he says that the Balei Gaiva, they live their lives in a contradiction. I've called this the paradox of the Balei Gaiva, because they don't hold from anybody else, but they have to pretend they hold from you long enough in order to get kavod from you. Because if I really don't think you're worth anything, so then what good is a compliment from you? A compliment from a meaningless person is meaningless. A compliment is only significant if it comes from somebody who's itself significant. So somebody who has no kavod for anybody else is not going to have anywhere from where to draw kavod. So it's a pretty futile existence. So the people who are genuine mechubadim in this world are the people who first acknowledge others have kavod, and then there's something to build on for them to have kavod. So to realize that kavod is not a limited resource that you have to steal for yourself by knocking the other guy down, but quite the opposite, that it's going to increase through your sharing it with someone else. That's this notion of Tzoros Ayin also seems to reflect that. Ah, yes, I think that was a
question. Who said
that? Which part?
The idea, the contradiction between...
So I'm applying it to this idea of the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Maybe Rosh Hashanah once said the point about the Balagavit, I don't know from anybody else. I remember saying, if a little baby were to come up to me and say, Rabbi Shatta, you're the greatest. A little baby doesn't know anything. So the assumption is that when a person is of more stature, so then their compliments are more meaningful. Okay, so this is not a long aliyah, but nonetheless we'll skip to the end. So to look at the Nun Ches for a second. So the Habeged, O HaShasi, O HaEirev, O Chol Kli HaOr, Asher Techabes, Besar mehem hanoga v'chubas sheinus v'toher. So here it's interesting. So what happens? So you have this garment that has this thing on it. So you have to wash it, asher techabez. And then if the nega is gone, so then v'chubas sheinus v'toher. Then you wash it a second time, and it'll be clean. So if you look in the Torah's Kohenim, and it's something that Rosh Hashanah Bal Hirsch points out, that this word v'chubas, it's the same as the word or a few words before. You have twice in the same pasuk, you think it's the same thing. Right? It sounds like do the same thing twice. But the Chazal tell us not. The first is a real laundering, like a real laundry with detergent and with cleaning materials. And the second is a tefillah in the mikveh. So it's a ritual washing. So Chazal tell us that it doesn't really mean the exact same process. Thank you. So asks your namesake, Moshe Feinstein. Your name sharer, Moshe Feinstein. His middle name is Bachner. Maybe not, that might be wrong. Sorry?
Chabona.
Okay, I'm missing something. But in the interest of time, I'm going to continue to miss it. But Moshe Feinstein writes, in the Darash Moshe, that why indeed, he asks your question. So if it doesn't mean the same thing, so why does the Torah Shin Chassav use the same word for two different things? And he writes there that it's because the Torah wants us to feel like spiritual tuma is as repulsive as physical dirt. So the same word that we use for actual physical laundry, we're going to use also for the spiritual process of tahara in that sense, in order to convey that that's what. That's how we should respond to it. Now, the last pasuk of this aliyah, but we have still yet another aliyah to go. The last pasuk of this aliyah: Zos Taras Negat Saras Beger Hatzemer O Hapishtim O Hashasi O HaErev O Kol Kli Or LeTahara O LeTamal. So this is the Torah. I mean, this is the rule of the disease of Saras that's in a garment of Pishtim or of Semer, whether it's in the Shasi or the Erev, whether it's this way or that way. Oh, kol klior, or anything that is made out of skin, l'taharo, o l'tamo, so to make it tahar or to make it tame. So what's the significance of that phrase, l'taharo, l'tamo? There's a very technical point here. The Torah's Kohenim writes that just like it's a mitzvah to be metayer, so it's also a mitzvah to be metame. So Nassim Gestet, Nassim Sefer and Chumash, has a little bit of a discussion about this. He says, what's the point there? Says maybe you would think that the real issue here is to try to be matayer, try to get the person released from the situation, the garment here released from the situation. And if not, then the default is tameh. But no, that to be matameh is also a mitzvah. So what's an afkamina? See, yes, some very technical afkamina is one that has a little bit of synergy for us. Says, you know, is it a mitzvah when you're being matameh? Is that a mitzvah mitzvah? Should we say that you shouldn't do it in an unclean place? So it shouldn't be Bizur Mitzvah. And he writes there, I don't know how often this is going to come up, but just for the synergy, we'll mention it, that if a Kohen was being Mitame, should say that he's Potter from Pruta de Rav Yosef, he shouldn't have to pay money, so he's like, oh, take the Mitzvah. Okay. But he also discusses there, there's one opinion in Chazal, that in general, the attitude is, we don't see Negoyim on a Yantif. So it's not potentially Shter the Sunchas Yantif. So one opinion of the Gemara is that maybe we should say, let the Kohen look, And if it's tar, good, everyone will be happy. And if not, they'll wait till after you have to say anything. So the other opinion is, maybe based on this, that no, you can't do that. If you're going to look, you're going to have to say whatever. You have to call it as you see it. If it's tame, you have to say tame. So for that reason, we don't look at all. We don't get involved in the whole question. And that's perhaps what it means here, that just like it's a mitzvah to be mitar, it's a mitzvah to be mitame. But the Gemara in Nazir, in Samachem Beis, the Gemara has another point here, that the suffix b'tchila, before you've established anything wrong, is tahar when it comes to Nagayim, and that's why we start off with the Tahara, that word comes first, in order to convey that point. So here, Rav Shamshon Fal Hirsch has a very long piece about this, that at the end of Parshas Tazria, so right after this, the last pasuk in Tazria, so the end, he starts from this pasuk, and then he has about 10 pages, where he goes into the whole theme of Saras, and he goes into very interesting detail, at great length, where he says that one should not think that this was a physical malady that had fears of contagion. That's what everyone always assumed. And he quotes from the British Medical Journal of his day, talking about leprosy. It's a very interesting discussion. But it says people thought that the Jews were very sensitive to contagious leprosy, so therefore anything that had a hint of that, they had this extreme quarantine in order to protect from it. So he goes to great lengths to show that's not true, and many details you could probably think of, even without being a big expert in Hilchos Negayim, and only about half of you are probably big experts in Hilchos Negayim. So he goes to a lot of examples that show that it's not physical, but that it's spiritual. But one of the points he makes here is this point, that if it was a physical danger, so we say, Chamiras Akanta Meisur, that if it was a Safek, we would be still concerned about the physical danger. So the fact that we can say that the Safek, the premise is Lahakel, so that shows you again that it's not something that we're actually physically afraid of, but it's something that reflects a spiritual condition which follows spiritual rules. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a comment here as well, where he says that the idea of Lataro before Latamo, it means, and that Safek should say Latar, he says that the message is that here again, consider that this is all about trying to inspire change in people and spiritual awakening. So he says you should never give up on anyone, never think that there's no chance that we're going to get through this guy, it's not worth my breath, it's not worth trying to influence this person. I don't see it, it's never going to change. But instead, you should try, and you should recognize that things are possible. And he mentions there the Rambam, which is interesting because others in this context, others in this parsha should make note of this Rambam also. The Rambam, well, it's one of the most well-known Rambams, in Hilchos Gerushin, where he says, possibly the most well-known Rambam in the Mishneh Torah, where he says that the notion of kfiyah v'get, the idea that you can compel someone to give a get, is based on the pintel yid, essentially, that everyone really wants to do the right thing, they just have to get rid of them, in the Yiddish translation. Yeah. So, that they don't have Yiddish Mishneh Torah?
No.
Okay. In the future, he wrote
it
in
the Yiddish.
Right, in the future, he originally wrote it in Yiddish. So, in any event, so, the idea that really everybody wants to do the right thing, and just there's the Yetzirah in the way, so we have to do what we can to get the Yetzirah out of the way, and that will bring about the good person inside. So too, don't give up on anyone, assume that there's still the possibility of accomplishing this goal, and that's why the emphasis is the Safek Tar, with any chance and anything other than absolute hopelessness, then you make the effort. Okay, so with that, let's switch over to Mitzora. I think we'll just talk about one pasuk here. There is one pasuk that is quoted in a couple of halachic contexts. In addition, this has to do with Tumas Nida in the end of Parshas Mitzora and other related Tumas. There's an interesting discussion, which I won't get into, but Torah Tumim spends a lot of time on, about what is the actual source in the Torah for the chiyuv for a nida to go to the mikveh, which is such a basic premise of Judaism that is not spelled out clearly in the Torah, that that's what is necessary to get to Tara. So that's an interesting discussion. You can take a look at the Torah Tumim and elsewhere. But we'll zero in on one pasuk here in the middle. There's five psukim in the Aliyah, so the pasuk, the third pasuk, says, V'hizartem es b'nei Yisrael mitumasam, v'liyamusu b'tumasam, b'tamam es mishkani asher v'socham. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean literally. So it means you should separate, you should warn the people, but not warn in the sense of azhara. It's not a hey. We'll talk about the sharish of this word. But you should keep them away from their tumah, they shouldn't die in their tumah, but tamam is mishkani, v'ser b'socham, in conveying tumah to my mishkan. So the pashtus of the pasuk is, first of all, just to get in terms of the literal translation, so how does v'zarta mean to separate? So it's not, again, you don't have a hey here, it's a milash nazir, as many explain that a nazir is somebody who is separate, and first we'll discuss a nazir, the crown, because a king is separate and distinct. So you should separate them from the Tumah. So the Pashas is, this is talking about going into the Beis HaMikdash, Betumah. That's what the rest of the Pasuk sounds like, about talking about Mishkani, and talking about dying. That's a reference to Kares. It sounds like that's what it's talking about. But the Gemara Maseches Shavuos has a discussion, this is a Machlokas in general, whether this is an Asmachter, or it's a literal interpretation. There is a din of Vestos. So none of you are married yet, but God willing, soon I have to learn Hilchos Nida. So the concept of Vestos means that when a woman is expecting to become a Nida, so obviously there's a prohibition for the husband and wife to be together when she is a Nida, but when it's expected to come, biologically, through a number of different kinds of indications, which is not our scope right now, but when we have various indications that it's about to come, so then that's a vesas, and the husband and wife are obligated to separate at that time. So it's a machlokas, whether it's a din derais or din derabanan, but there is an association with this pasuk, might be an asmachta, but it's an association with this pasuk of that the people should be separated from their tumah. So from tumas nida, the husband and wife should separate when that is on its way. So how does that fit with the rest of the pasuk? So it has mishkani, so doesn't it sound like it's talking about the mishkan? It's talking about the Beis HaMikdash. So the Netziv writes that this is the inner mishkan, this is the Lev HaAdam, which is the inner sanctuary, so it should not be defiled by Avera. And the Meshech Chachma writes that we know that we say that in a Shidduch, so Isha Isha Zacha Shechina B'nehem, that when a man and woman are meritorious, so the Shechina is between them, the Divine Presence is there. So to not interfere with that, that's what the Pasuk should be read to understand, at least in the sense that there is this notion of Vestos being conveyed from this Pasuk. So in general, it's machlokas if it's deraisa or derabanan. So there is a question why there should be such a discussion, especially if it's not clear what this pasuk is telling us. So there are various explanations, just to mention the Noda Yehuda and his tshuvas. So he writes, essentially, the question is, so what do we have a right to assume on a level in her Torah? So if she hasn't become a nida yet, so you should say that there is a cheskes tara, that so far as we know, she's Tahara. So until we know otherwise, we should assume she's Tahara. So that should be the premise as far as Din Daraisa is concerned. So what's the other opinion? It says that in Torah there is a Din of Vesas. So it says that has to do with a principle, which there is a Chazaka that this process can be expected to start on time. The language is Oreach b'zman oba or Orach b'zman oba. So it's machlokas the Orach and the Orach HaShulchan, how to read that word, the Aleph Reish Ches. So Oreach literally means a visitor comes on schedule, and that's euphemistic, right? In the Gemara. So but the Orach understands it as Orach Hadal Bios the Sar Orach Kanashim, as Avin says. So that's a reference to the cycle. So it's a question, what exactly is the translation or the pronunciation of that phrase? But in any event, so the Noda Yehuda says that, so that's also a chazaka. So it's just interesting, like from a Shev Shmaisa kind of perspective, how do you weigh different chazakas against each other? So you have, on the one hand, the chazaka cheskes tara, that things have been one way so far, so we should be able to assume that that's what they are now. On the other hand, We also know that something is destined to change, that also creates a chazaka, either creates its own chazaka or it undermines the first chazaka. Because when you know that there is a natural process going on, you don't say that, well, the last time I met this person 5 years ago, he was 10 years old, so Chazak is still 10 years old. You know that certain things naturally change. So, therefore, that undermines the concept of a Chazaka Meikara, and that's a whole discussion, just how much that should fit in. I'll just close with one last point, that Moshe Chachmir, if you remember correctly, Moshe Chachmir has a comment that I think we mentioned probably Parshas Parah, that there is a view in Rishonim that just like Parshas Zachar is derived, so that everyone agrees the mitzvah is Kriyas Malik, and many agree that that applies to the reading of Parshas Zachar. But Parshas Parah, it's less understood that there is a view in Rishonim, which is called Shulchan Aruch, not a small view, that Parshas Parah is also Daraisa. So the problem is, if you want to say Zachar is Daraisa, we could argue about whether it means to lay in that section on that Shabbos or not, but we know what the source is. If it's Daraisa, it's the very clear pasuk of Zachar is Asher Asah Lecha Amalek. If you want to say Parshas Parah is Daraisa, it's not so clear. Where in the Torah are we told to read Parshas Parah? So Moshe Chachmir, if I remember correctly, says from this pasuk that this idea that you should keep the Jews separate from Tuma, so the reading of Parshas Parah in public, this idea of the process of achieving Tara, is a way of reminding the people that there's a notion of Tuma Vatara, they have to be careful about it, and this is something that is an issue, and therefore, when the Torah says you have to make sure people are aware, this is what it translates to. Okay, so again, like we started late, we're stuck in the time frame that we said, so we'll now head off to the Suda Soda, and hopefully it should be...